And thanks for tuning in to this edition of Conversations with the Candidates. My guest today is Wendy Bozell. She is a candidate in the Democratic primary for mayor of Baltimore City. She is a graduate of Baltimore City Community College, Towson State University, and she also holds a master's degree from Coppin State University. She is a teacher in the Walbrook Junction area at the Kipp Academy, as well as the Home and Hospital Program for the Baltimore City Public Schools. She, prior to her job in education, headed two nonprofits and worked in the corporate world for a while as well. Wendy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Tom, for inviting me.
So tell us a little bit more about your background and how you think that would inform your work if you're elected mayor.
Well, thank you for that. I worked as director for nonprofits, muscular dystrophy, and United Cerebral Palsy, and I worked to inform the public and raise millions of dollars to help people who needed that support. And organized camps and fundraisers and just events, too.
And you live in Upper Fells Point.
Yes, I do.
And you served as the president and vice president of that community association.
Yes,
as well.
I did.
What kind of work did you do there?
Well, what I did there was I worked on a grant. It was for $80,000 that I got from the state of Maryland because we had a 300% increase in crime last year. So we needed to do something to address that. And what we did...
We're talking about 2023?
2022.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, a lot of it had to do with COVID. And we were able to install now with the $80,000 cafe lighting, and that has made a difference in the crime in our area. We also had some traffic issues. So instead of putting, like, those horrible bumps in the pavement, we did... It's called street art. So we have street art. We had artists come out and paint beautiful artwork in the street so that people slow down instead of running into our row homes.
So you don't have the bumps.
No.
Yeah, the traffic calmers or whatever
right,
they call
like
them.
It's like a calming.
Right.
And then we were able to get a lot of cameras that would be real time so that we can then report things happening to the police when cars are broken in and we've had a lot of shootings. So that way we were able to at least get the police the information they need to try to solve the crimes.
Yeah, an $80,000 grant, that's significant.
Yeah.
You can do a lot with 80 grand. Yeah,
that's great.
That's great. And you are funding your campaign through this new program that the city council passed a couple of years ago.
Yes.
With public financing. How's
yes.
that working?
It's working pretty good. It's the first time that they've ever done this with the candidate. So a lot of times they don't have good direction for us. But I need help now. I have until April 1st. To get 500 people to make a donation, but the donations have to be under 150. So I haven't taken any donations higher than 150. So I won't be beholden to any business or owe any favors. I'll be the first candidate that'll be a true public servant.
But if you're not able to reach yes. that 500 person threshold, that means you don't get the funding, the
you
public
don't get
funding.
The public yeah. funding.
Running for mayor is expensive, and it takes a lot of time, and you're working full time, et cetera. Why do you want to do this?
Well, I had to do it. I was tired of walking into hospital rooms to teach students that had been shot. They hadn't been killed, so they don't get counted in the under 300 people that were murdered this year. So they survived, but a lot of them are in bad shape. Like, they're paralyzed and they can't do what they were, you know, what young kids should be able to do. So I couldn't take it anymore. And I felt like I had to do something so that no more children are being shot. Because when I looked, I had to pull their school records to see now what can I do to help this student. And most of them had been or all of them, were 2 years behind in school, and they were 50 to 100 days absent. If someone would be checking on these students day four, when they're supposed to be, they wouldn't have been shot. And it makes me really angry that we don't have any safeguards in place for our students. We don't have truancy officers anymore, so no one's checking on these kids. Truancy officers, they would go to the home, find out what are the barriers for preventing this child from going to school. So they would find out if they need uniforms, or some of these families, the children are working at night and they're tired to go to school, or it's transportation because you have a city school choice with and not good transportation to get kids from one end to the other. And sometimes it's just uniforms. Like, maybe the parents don't have a washing machine or a dryer, or they only have one or two uniforms. Then the kid doesn't want to go to school with a dirty uniform, so they don't go.
So is the problem there then within the school system, within North Avenue, and the way the schools are being administered, or is it the way the city is being administered? Because the mayor, obviously, is not directly responsible for the performance of the school system.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. He's not directly responsible, but he's supposed to work and use the city services that we have available to help students to go to school. And recently, he did work with Santa Lisa this September. And they came together for a answer to truancy in Baltimore City. We were all the teachers were all have bated breath for this. So,
and we're talking about Dr. Sonia Santa Lisa, who is the CEO of Baltimore City
right.
Public Schools.
And Brandon Scott worked together, and their plan was to give a trophy to the school with the best attendance. And we know that that did not work. Right now, 58% of our students are chronically absent. Oh, and what else is happening now? Youth crime is at an all-time high. So it's a direct correlation with that. What we need to do, and it's like threefold, basically, like you said. The mayor isn't directly responsible, but he can enforce or make sure the police department is enforcing Maryland state law. Maryland state law says that if you are absent for 3 days and you don't let the school know and you have a valid reason, then you're fined $50 a day. The second offense, it's $100 a day. The third offense, you have to go in front of a judge and let's find out what the problems are. So parents don't know that. We need to have public service announcements saying that. We need to put it on the web page for Baltimore City Schools. We need to let parents know that it's so important to go to school that you're going to get a fine for it.
But, you know, given the fact that poverty is often at the root of the reasons that children are not attending school, I mean, it's not just a truancy problem. It's a housing insecurity problem. It's a food insecurity
right.
problem.
Right.
As you mentioned, these other, you know, things, transportation, et cetera. So how is, I mean, that may be the law, but is that the really best way to do it?
No, that's why I said it's a three-prong approach. You first have to inform these parents that it's so important that your child goes to school that we have a Maryland state law that's going to be enforced. I don't want to enforce, like you said, I don't want to enforce that law, but we used to have a bar. We have to have a standard. We need to at least inform. If you ask any parent now, they don't know the law. So let's inform on the law. We can always say, oh, you know, we're not going to fine you this time. Let's find out what the problems are. And that was the next thing I said that the mayor can work at. It is, let's provide the community services that are available. Baltimore City has services. The school board has avenues to get help that they list on the website. But you're not going to go get that help if there's not a real reason to. So we need to let parents know and then also inform them of the social services that are available to help them to get their kids to school. I think that goes hand in hand with that.
We are recording this on crossover day in the Maryland legislature, and there are two bills, one in the House, one in the Senate, concerning juvenile justice. There were a couple of packages of bills passed a couple of years ago. The bills that the legislature is considering this year, you know, are in a way a reaction to those two bills. What is your position about the bills that the current legislature is considering having to do with juvenile justice and reforming the juvenile justice system?
Well, I went to Annapolis to testify because this is something near and dear to my heart. And what they're missing, one component they're missing is making sure kids go to school. That's not listed in any of the legislature that's there. And education and crime go hand in hand. And I kept on like going to Annapolis and say, well, can we add this to it? But I think it fell on deaf ears because what they're really concerned is that kids are, let's see, charged for crimes, that they can be interrogated, that we can find reasons to prevent them that way. But it's really an issue of getting to the root of why these crimes are being committed and why they are the things that you just mentioned. food insecurity, housing. We really have to address those issues. When a kid has a home to live in, then a lot of the kids that I work with are going from one rental place to the next. They're horrible. They have rats. They have lead paint. And all these things go hand in hand with youth violence.
So what is the capacity of the mayor then to address that particular problem? I mean, violence here in the city of Baltimore in 2023 did, in fact, go down. And murders were down. Non-fatal shootings were down. 68 fewer people were killed in 2023 than had been killed in 2022. So there's definitely progress there. Mayor Scott takes credit for that. He credits the GVRS, the Group Violence Reduction Strategy. Do you think the strategy is the reason that that progress was made? Is that something you would want to continue?
Well, it might in some instances, but homicides are down. This is true. But Baltimore young people are being shot at the highest rate in over a decade. So we had 22 teens between 13 and 18 that were killed. But what you don't hear on the news is, and these are the kids that I see, is 122 were shot and survived. And
yeah, and juvenile victims were up in the context of this overall decrease in crime.
Yeah. Right, and that's what I'm trying to say, and that what we need to do is to have more problem-oriented policing. Let's go into the community. Let's look at the data. Let's find out why are crimes are created. Why are they happening? And ask the community, when do you want us here? Like, the biggest shooting we had was in Brooklyn when we had 30 people shot. And, all right, Safe Streets was involved with that, but they didn't follow the protocol they were supposed to. They were supposed to let the police know that there was six or seven instances that they were able to prevent the shootings or any fighting from happening, and they were supposed to alert the police, but they didn't. And if we did problem-oriented policing, we would have already been in the neighborhood in Brooklyn. We'd say, oh, what events do you have? What's coming up? What can we do to support the community? And they would have already been there to prevent the problem from happening. And if we did problem-oriented policing, we would not have had the shootings that we had in Brooklyn.
If you get elected mayor, will Commissioner Rich Worley continue as the police chief?
Well, so far, I would have to meet with him and discuss my plan for Baltimore City. And my plan is to meet with him every day at 8 o'clock. And we're going to look at the data, what happened the night before. And we're going to figure out what we're going to do to solve these problems so we don't have the crime the next day.
Mayor Brandon Scott suggests that it's the switching from plan to plan over the years that has been part of the problem of sustaining any gains in reducing violence and improving public safety. So, you know, we had a number of different police commissioners over a period of time. We had a number of different mayors in a very short period of time.
Yes, we did.
So he's basically saying, we've got this the system in place, this group violence reduction strategy. We need to stay with it for once. You know, we've had it in the past. It wasn't followed through with. What about that argument that he's making about consistency and follow through?
Well, I looked at the data, and I looked at when was the youth crime is what I really look at, or crime in general, was lower. And it's when we had our 64 PAL programs in place. And that's the Police Athletic Leagues.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had the Police Athletic Leagues, youth violence was at an all-time low. And another problem facing our city is we're down like 700 police officers. And at that time, when we had the Police Athletic League, what it is a program where kids can go to for after school till 8 o'clock. And they have police there. They have tutors there to help them with their homework. And they play sports. And they go to other communities and work together. And it's like a partnership with the youth and the police. And they had the highest amount of young people going to the police academy when they had the PAL program. If you talk to any of the police officers that are police officers now in Baltimore City, they got their start in the PAL program. So I would like to reinstate those again, and that's something the mayor can do.
And when we think about the other issues that are affecting the city, former Mayor Sheila Dixon has criticized Brandon Scott, the current mayor, for ineffective management of city agencies. What do you think the city can do better?
Well, when I become mayor, we're going to have independent accounting of every department, because the first thing we want to know is where is the money and where is it going? So we need to have transparency for that and the public to be aware of it. The second is, I can just go by what I've dealt with as a Baltimore City teacher. I started 10 years ago. I'm a career changer. I worked for Nielsen TV ratings at the time, and I'm like, what am I doing? I'm letting people know what the top 10 TV shows are. My mom's a teacher, Baltimore City teacher, and I said, you know, I just don't feel like I'm doing anything. And she said, well, you liked volunteering in my classroom. Why don't you be a teacher? And that's when I started to go to night school at Coppin and became a teacher. All right, so I was so happy. Okay, I have my degree. I'm going to really make a difference for kids' lives in Baltimore City. My first day as a teacher, I get to the school I'm assigned to. I find out the school has no heat. And I taught there for 3 years with no heat. And I'm like, who's running the city? What is going on? Then I was given a laptop that was 25 years old. And I'm like, what? And no books. And I'm like, and you can't drink the water. And I'm like, I went outside. I'm like, where am I really? Am I in a dream? Am I in the United States? Or am I in a third world country? Because that's where I felt I was. So that's just one example, and that's Baltimore City schools. But then,
and 10 years hence, has it improved?
No. Currently, I have asked, I started in October because there's a computer program that I really like to use with my students in the hospital, and I need something like that because I'm not in a classroom a lot of times, so I need a computer program to work with them individually, and it hasn't gone through the budget process yet. So that's October.
See,
I think the school's going to be over before then.
Again, it sounds like a school administration problem rather than a mayoral problem.
Yeah, and I hear you saying that. My next thing then is one with our DPW. Right now, we're down 280 jobs. We got money from ARFA from COVID, and 3 years ago now, that could have went to getting more or giving incentives for DPW, went to buy new trucks, could have helped clean up our city, which is another, it's just shown that when you have crime and trash, they go hand in hand. When you walk out your door and you see trash everywhere, it doesn't make you feel good about yourself, and it leads to crime, like the broken window syndrome. If we clean up the city, so that's one thing that was really ineffective. The money is still in a bank account, and it's actually a line item of the budget, is the interest that they make on the money that they haven't used, that they were supposed to use 3 years, that Brandon was supposed to use 3 years ago. So then he lost $10 million that was supposed to go to help the homeless and vacant homes.
Yeah, there was the Department of Homeless Services, and the woman who was running that department has since left. But yeah, they messed up.
Right. And then you have, a lot of people now are having problems with their cars being stolen. So you have to go to, you know, pick up your car. But a computer system is so antiquated. They've been trying for 3 years and they still haven't fixed it. So instead of fixing it and figuring out where your car is, and so we get a lot of those out of the impound lot, they're renting another impound lot. So wait a minute. Let's address that issue. And it is a problem with purchasing that has to be streamlined. Right now, it isn't 3 years and you still can't buy a computer program to figure out what you're doing.
So as a person who hasn't worked in government, you've never held elective office, what gives you confidence that you could address those problems in a way that, you know, a Brandon Scott or a Sheila Dixon cannot?
Well, they didn't have experience in government when they started. And what makes it a little bit different for me is I plan to bring in good people to address each issue. I want to have think tanks. We have Hopkins, we have University of Maryland, we have a lot of community associations that do a lot for the city. Let's bring them all together and let's have a think tank and we can figure it out. I don't pretend to know all the problems, but a lot of the problems seem like common sense to me. Right now, we're losing a lot of money because our MARC train to go back to D.C. closes at 10. If we had it run till 3 a.m., pretty easy fix, we could bring in a lot of money from people in D.C. A lot of people in D.C. do not have cars. They could go to games, concerts, you know, bring in some money. And maybe while they're here, they might like to stay and rent a place or stay in a hotel. And we could really up the money here coming into our city. But we have to make it so that people can get here. Another thing, we have Super Bowl every year. And people say Super Bowl. We have the Preakness here every year. In Kentucky, they make $500 million in revenue every year for the city because they do a two-week celebration. They have a sailboat race. We can do that. They have fireworks. I think we could have the reenactment of 1812. We can have a big festival. We have Artscape. We can copy that and have another one around Preakness. And then we can have as many concerts as we can. Have a ball. Have a balloon race. Just try to have them have events happening all through the city. So $500 million, I think we could bring in $1 billion, and that would address a lot of the issues that we have here in our city.
One of the issues we have is a precipitous drop in the population.
Yes.
We have people moving out of the city. We've got fewer than 600,000 people living in Baltimore for the first time in, you know, a long, long time, 70 or 80 years or something. What's the fix for that?
Well, when I talk to a lot of young people here, that they're out like pushing their kids in their strollers or around the city, they're like, yeah, we like the city, but education is bad in the city. So I'm going to leave when my kid is five. And you see a lot of that happening. So one thing is to improve the education system. And it's not that we don't have enough money. The budget this year is $1.7 billion. We should have every school should be a great school with that amount of money. But Baltimore's, this is how we run our city schools. I just want people to know this. We have 164 schools. Each principal is given $10 to $20 million to decide for themselves, down to payroll, what they're going to do. So they go, oh, here, principal, here, you've had about 2 weeks training and budgeting. Here's $10 million. And figure out what you're going to do with that money and figure out payroll, too. So what is North Avenue doing? I'm really not sure if each principal has to do that. If the principal was just doing the principal job, make sure teachers are teaching, make sure kids come to school, build relationships with the community and with parents, we would have a lot more kids coming to school.
So less autonomy in terms of the budgeting process, you think it would be an
improvement?
It has
to be centrally. Every other district does it central. Baltimore County does, and they have way better results than we have.
And what about the tax base and the tax rate? People talk about how, you know, the taxes in Baltimore City are, you know, virtually twice as expensive as the surrounding jurisdictions. Do you think the fact that the tax rate is as high as it is a contributing factor to people leaving the city? How important is the tax rate to the population decline issue?
I think that tax rate is more about more new people coming into our city. And I like the plan that we're going to just gradually decrease it over 7 years. And I think if people saw that, if we did in small increments and then do other things like a Preakness celebration for 2 weeks to bring in some more extra money, and everything would go hand in hand. Once you have...
So that's the Renew Baltimore
right.
Effort to put a ballot referendum
right.
On the November 2024
that's
ballot
what I'm for.
That would decrease the property tax rate by half.
Half.
But
not
over
all
a period
at once,
of
but
time.
Over a period of time. So it's kind of scary if your tax, you know, just for school system, for any funding, if you have to figure out what I'm going to do now, I'm cutting down. But what's going to happen in the long run is, when I researched the Renew program, is that more people come in, you get a higher tax bracket, then you have businesses coming in, and it just pretty much flips it, and you'll make more in the long run.
How about the composition of the Board of Estimates? Right now, it's five people, three of whom are appointed by the mayor, or, you know, the mayor and two other people. So there's a voting bloc that very much favors the mayor. We talk about how this is a strong mayor system here in Baltimore for that reason and several others. What do you think we should do with the Board of Estimates?
I really think that we need to have more people on the Board of Estimates that are actually voted in by the public, because that way there would be accountability for their decisions.
So vote more people on at large from outside so not from the city council, not from any of the agency heads.
No.
I mean, now we have the DPW chief, et cetera.
Right.
Okay. And is there, there is a referendum that will likely end up on the ballot, which is sponsored by David Smith, the owner of Sinclair Broadcasting and now the Baltimore Sun, to reduce the size of the Baltimore City Council, which is currently 14 members. He's suggesting it should be reduced to 8. Your feelings about that proposal?
I don't like it at all. I think we need more representation, not less.
And what is the argument to keep it at 14 or to even increase it from there? Because it was reduced a while back.
I would actually like it to be more, because what we need is it's supposed to be a part-time position, our council, and they all have other jobs. So how can you have another job as a part-time position and then you're going to add more constituents to help you? No, we need less, unless we're going to change it to a full-time job. And that's your only responsibility and the only job is to be on the council.
Yeah, and there are several members of the council who do consider it a full-time job and they don't have outside employment, or if they do, it's kind of consulting. And
but most of them do.
Yeah, yeah. What about the plans for Harbor Place? David Bramble and MCB Real Estate have, you know, a plan that's in some quarters quite controversial and other quarters quite welcomed, including the political establishment, the president of the Senate, the governor, the mayor. They're all for it. What about you?
Well, of course, I think something should have been done 20 years ago. I mean, Harbor Place was in receivership. So actually, Bramble is like pretty much a hero, because he came in and said, look, I'll do something. Because up to then, no one was doing anything. So I don't know why we're mad at David Bramble. He's doing something. Nobody in city council had any ideas to do anything. And it was in receivership, so we would lose it anyway. So I feel that there has to be... I talked to David Bramble. I'm like, you know, I don't really like that you have all these apartments. That doesn't build community or bring people in to have apartments. What brings people in is what we should copy is the National Harbor. And at the National Harbor, they have mixed use, which I mean they have townhomes, they have apartments, they have condos, they have businesses, they have restaurants. And it's like walkways and it's on the water, it's near the casino, and they bring it all together. And that's what you need. You don't still need apartments. And I said, how come you can't do that? And he said he really only has the property leased to him for 30 years. So how can he sell condos or sell townhomes? So we need to change that part of the law and then make the Inner Harbor like a community just like the National Harbor. And it's been very successful in National Harbor. We should copy what they do there. I don't want big, giant apartments around the city, but I wouldn't mind around the harbor, but I wouldn't mind a park in the middle like David is suggesting, and then having townhomes, apartments, mixed use, so that you could walk a neighborhood and not walk by skyscrapers, but actual streets. And that's how it is at the National Harbor. People walk around. There's a business here, a restaurant here, almost like the rest of our city, which makes it a charmed city where you can walk around, have a restaurant, have something to eat. Let's copy that, what we already have in our city, and copy what's the National Harbor. Pretty easy.
How about housing? As we finish up, let me bring up another very hot-button issue. We have thousands, the number, the different people estimate different numbers of vacant housing, but it's somewhere in between 15 and 20, something like that, 20,000 vacant houses. So there's that issue. There's the affordable housing issue of people not being able to afford anywhere to live, and then there's the we have on the one hand an excess, and on the other hand we have some certain neighborhoods where you can't find one to buy.
Right. Okay. So I have like 5 different step plan for this. The first one is when I become an office, if your home has been vacant for a year, you have 3 months to get a plan in place and bring it to the mayor's office. If you don't, then I'm going to triple your taxes on your property. It's been vacant, and I say a year, but most of the properties are vacant 10 years, 5 years. So you're not going to develop it, then I'm going to triple your taxes. Then in a year, if you haven't come up with a plan, then we're going to find a plan and we're going to take these homes. Then the second part of my plan is the rental situation is really bad for a lot of people here in Baltimore City. You're on rental assistance and you're paying $1,800, $2,000, maybe $2,500 depending on your family. So we give this money to out-of-town landlords or out-of-country landlords, and they're renting to people with places that have lead paint problems, rats, just bad shape, and they're not taking care of it. I want to use the vacant homes that we're going to be getting after we go through my program and build infrastructure where you can use your rental assistance to actually buy these homes so we can turn these areas into communities. And I want to be able to build generational wealth. So I want you to be able to use your rental assistance not to give to some landlord that's out of country or state that's not staying here, that money. I want it to go to the home that is vacant, and let's fix that home up, and you can be part of that, and you can use your rental assistance check to purchase that home. So instead of giving you $1,500, the city will give you $800 towards your mortgage. So then we're banking money to help that home in the future if they need it. And then we're the first time that we'll be building generational wealth. Some people say, oh, you're going to give them money. We already give them money. We're going to give them less money. And then in 30 years, they will own that home. They will be able to give it to their family. It'll be generational wealth, which is we're missing for a lot of families here in Baltimore City. And when a child has a home that they go to every day, they do so much better in school. They're not worried about crime. They have a home to go to. We can also, and I'm working on this one, is we have the biggest port. We import the most cars, trucks in the country because we're the most west. We can get in more west than any other port. So it saves them on transportation costs to move trucks, cars throughout there. So that means there's a lot of containers that are here in Baltimore that we could use for container homes, which are really inexpensive to convert, to use for people that are homeless or that need, maybe they need a place to live. And we can turn those into apartments. You just stack them on each other. It's an easy way. And Reagan had a plan that's still in place from the federal government that we can get some federal land that's in the city to use to put these container homes on, that we can help build communities for people who need housing inexpensively.
Wendy Bozell, after a career in the nonprofit sector and in the corporate sector, became a teacher in the Baltimore City Public Schools. She's now a candidate in the Democratic primary for mayor. Election day is May 14th. Early voting begins on May 2nd. April 23rd is the deadline to register if you're not registered. Wendy, thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it. And we'll see you out there on the campaign trail.
Thank you. You will.